This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
Hey, Marketplace listeners, you know around here we like to think you're never too young to learn about the economy and financial basics. That's why we're bringing the Million Bazillion Live Tour to school to teach important lessons about budgeting, investing, saving, and more. It's all the fun of the podcast, but now live, immersive, and interactive. Special thanks to our tour partner, Greenlight, the debit card and money app for kids and teens. Learn more about Greenlight at greenlight.com/million. That is greenlight.com/million. On the program today, what this labor market used to look like. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace. In Los Angeles, I'm Kai Rizdahl. It is Thursday today, the 5th of October. Good as always to have you along, everybody. You know, it has been, it's been a while since this economy has been normal. 3.5 years, if you're counting, feels like longer, though, which I mentioned because it is starting slowly, very, very slowly, to look like things are getting back to what we have been used to seeing. A key indicator is going to come tomorrow morning with the September unemployment report, which, if trends hold, is going to show a little less job growth than we have been seeing since the post-pandemic boom got going. Reversion to the mean is the phrase you're looking for here. Marketplace's Mitchell Hartman gets us going.
1 year ago, back in August 2022, the economy was adding about 350,000 jobs a month, way above the historical average. But by August 2023, says Olivia Cross at Capital Economics,
the 3 month rate of payroll growth slowed to just 150,000. That's below the average we're seeing in 2019.
Don't worry, it's still plenty to sustain a growing economy, says Elise Gould at the Economic Policy Institute.
When we see job growth in excess of around 100,000, that means that not only are we keeping up with population growth, we're pulling people in off the sidelines.
Gould sees a job market returning pretty close to pre-pandemic normal.
The share of workers between 25 and 54 with a job is now at or higher than before, particularly for women. We have very low Black unemployment. So there are many metrics that look very much like 2019 and even better.
I think we're pretty close to what I'd consider to be a good normal. You know, unemployment somewhere between 3.5% and 4%. That'd be consistent with a full employment economy.
Mark Zandi is chief economist at Moody's Analytics. He says one metric that hasn't returned to norm yet is wage growth, which is a biggie for the Fed. 1 year ago, average hourly earnings were rising 5% a year.
Right now, we're probably somewhere between 4 and 4.5. I think the Fed would like to see something closer to 3.5 to 4. So we're, you know, within spitting distance, but not quite there yet.
Olivia Cross at Capital Economics is confident we will get there. As evidence, she points to the quits rate, how many workers voluntarily leave their jobs for new ones, usually to get higher pay.
That's pointing to wage growth easing to around 3.5% by the end of the year.
Before the pandemic, in 2019, wage growth was running close to that, between 3.5 and 3%. I'm Mitchell Hartman for Marketplace.
On Wall Street today, this Thursday, down just a little bit, waiting for that jobs report. Traders were. We'll have the details when we do the numbers. If you want to buy a house, yes, of course you think about the price, how much you have to put down, how much you're going to have to borrow, and how much that loan is going to cost, the interest rate. And then you got to do some math and come up with your monthly payment. And on that front, the news is not good. There is new data out from the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau that shows just how much higher those monthly payments have gotten thanks to sticky high home prices and mortgage rates that are starting to bump closer to 8% for a 30-year fixed. The average monthly payment on a new mortgage, the CFPB says, rose 46% from the end of 2021 to the end of 2022, $1,400 to just over $2,000. And you don't need me to tell you this, prices and mortgage rates have only continued to go up. Marketplace's Samantha Fields has that one.
Buying a house has gotten way less affordable all over the country, but some places are worse than others. Yesenia Aguirre Chavez has been trying to buy her first house in the Boston area for a year now.
I got approved for a loan for $1 million. And I know that sounds like a lot, but from what I have found, it hasn't really gotten me very far.
Aguirre Chavez is 29 and owns a small business leading hikes and walking dogs. She's beyond ready to move out of the room she's currently renting for $1,400 a month. But
they've put in maybe 7 or 8 offers, and every single time someone offered a little bit more than I did.
With home prices and interest rates both so high, Young Joe, an economist at the CFPB, says increasingly people are having trouble qualifying for a mortgage.
We noticed a huge jump in the share of applications that were being denied due to too high of a DTI, or average debt-to-income ratio.
Most lenders won't give someone a mortgage if the monthly payment would be more than about 30 or 40% of their income.
Even though incomes have gone up, you know, they haven't gone up enough.
Eddie Seiler, an economist at the Mortgage Bankers Association, says it shouldn't be like this forever.
As we sort of resolve a lot of this uncertainty, hopefully interest rates will come down. You know, our current forecast has them coming down to 5.5% range at the end of 2024.
And he says that should help more people get into homes. In Boston, Yesenia Aguirre Chavez is still looking now, even though everything feels absurdly expensive for what it is.
None of it makes sense. None of it makes sense. Rent is outrageous. And that's why I've been so proactive about finding something soon.
And why, even though she's frustrated by the market, she's determined to keep searching. I'm Samantha Fields for Marketplace.
True story. I walked into the office one Monday in July 2015, and I said to my boss, I'm just sick and tired of covering the Greek debt crisis from here. Let's just go. And a week later, we did, because 10 years ago, the Greek economy was challenged, to be kind. It was the biggest economic story in the world. There were real worries that its debt crisis was going to lead to the breakup of the European Union. Turns out, the Greek economy today is in a very different, much improved place. Liz Alderman is the chief European business correspondent for the New York Times, who's been in and out of Greece this summer. Liz, it's good to have you on.
Thank you so much for having me.
You know, a decade ago, less actually, basically all the economic news coming out of Greece, which then infected the rest of Europe, was bad. My question is, what happened?
Well, it's certainly been quite a turnaround. As you point out, you know, a decade ago, Europe was going through a terrible financial crisis. Greece was really the worst hit. And of all the countries, it took the most bitter austerity medicine that international creditors required. You know, the country was actually doing worse in relative terms than the United States did during the Great Depression. Hmm. The austerity really hurt the Greek people a lot. But eventually, in the last several years, there's been sort of an acceleration of an economic turnaround. We're basically at a point now where Greece is essentially booming.
What does it feel like? I mean, when I was there in 2015, you know, there were ATM lines because people weren't trusting the banks with their cash. It was very, very grim. Is it Is it, what's the mood, I guess, is the question.
The mood is definitely much brighter today than it was back then. I was just in Greece once again last week, and people have jobs. There are millions of tourists who have visited. You've got big companies from, you know, Microsoft to Pfizer, who in the last several years have basically witnessed this turnaround and have felt confident that they can put their money in Greece once again. And you also have major international ratings agencies that are basically starting to rate Greece once again as an investment trustworthy country. Things are markedly different today than they were even back in 2015 when you were there.
How do you put on your European business correspondent hat now and tell me how the Germans and the Northern Europeans feel about Greece now, or now that it's, you know, seemingly humming right along, they're not thinking about it much.
That's right. They're not thinking about it much. And one thing that's helped that greatly is the fact that, you know, back when people thought Greece was going to leave the Eurozone and break up the Eurozone, everybody was worried about Grexit. Grexit didn't happen. Mm-hmm. Instead, what happened was Brexit. Essentially, Europe started to trust Greece once again. And most recently, we've had the election of a conservative, business-friendly prime minister, Kyriakos Mitsotakis, who, unlike the previous leader, Alexis Tsipras, he wears a tie. He's, you know, Ivy League educated.
Tsipras famously did not wear a tie. We should tell
That's
people
right.
who didn't follow closely. He famously did not wear a tie.
That's exactly right. That was in some ways a symbolic protest against the fact that Europe was, you know, squeezing Greece so hard. Right. How do the rest of the Europeans see Greece today? They're essentially happy that Greece is no longer a problem. And, you know, the cherry on the cake is that Greece has actually been paying some of the bailout money back early. That's how much it's improved.
That's so interesting. So look, crystal ball this for me. Do you think the growth lasts? I mean, barring something exogenous, right? Does it last?
I mean, I think that's, you know, the biggest question in all of this. And, you know, people in Greece are being cautious, as they are everywhere in Europe. I mean, we've got sort of a war in our backyard. Russia's invasion of Ukraine continues. That's been wreaking havoc with prices, you know, in the supermarket. I mean, that being said, you know, huge numbers of people have been visiting Greece, tourists. That's helped to drive a boom in everything from construction to services. And then you also have companies, like I said, you know, Microsoft, Meta, and others, like actually pumping quite a large amount of investments into, you know, IT and sort of new economy, you know, areas of the economy. So people are hopeful that will help continue the upcycle.
Liz Alderman, European business correspondent for The New York Times. We got her today in Paris. Liz, thanks a lot. I appreciate your time.
Well, thank you so much. I really appreciated being on your show.
Coming up, a common refrain, perhaps?
Everything we've been experiencing has never happened before.
First, though, let's do the numbers. Dow Industrials down just a tad, ended things at 33,119. The NASDAQ off 16 points. That's about a 10% there, 13,219. The S&P 500 gave back 5 points, again a 10%, 42.58. Cleaning products maker Clorox declined 5.25% today after posting worse than expected first quarter guidance late yesterday. Alcoholic drink maker Constellation, the owner of beer brands Corona and Modelo, I use beer loosely there, slipped 3.2% today. It reported its wine and spirit sales dropped 14% year on year. Molson Coors gave back 6.3%. The Belgian beer giant Anheuser-Busch InBev, yes, Belgian Anheuser-Busch InBev, picked up 1.8%. Sam Fields was talking about housing. So how about some home builders, huh? D.R. Horton subtracted 0.5%. Lennar weakened 0.3% today. Bond prices went up just a bit. The yield on the 10-year T-note fell just a bit, 4.71%. You're listening to Marketplace.
Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling shipping supplies or promoting productivity programs, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/marketplace, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/marketplace now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/marketplace.
Traditional revenue sources for public media and media at large are declining this year, and we at Marketplace are not immune to those trends. We're currently tracking behind target for this budget year. We're tightening up our expenses, yes, but the need for trusted, grounded, fact-based reporting is as pressing as ever, and we simply cannot cut back on our mission. So we're turning to the listeners like you. Please step up now and invest in Marketplace. If you haven't given yet, now's the time. Go to marketplace.org/donate.
Looking for the highest interest rate on your cash? At public.com, you can earn 5.1% APY with a high-yield cash account. And while we can't say it's officially the highest interest rate out there, we can say this. It's a higher rate than Robinhood, a higher rate than SoFi, a higher rate than Marcus, a higher rate than Wealthfront, frankly, a higher rate than Capital One, a higher rate than Ally, a higher rate than Barclays, a way higher rate than Bank of America and Chase, a higher rate than Citi, Wells Fargo, Discover, and it's a higher rate than American Express, too. So if you want to start earning 5.1% APY on your cash, check out public.com. We can't say it's the highest interest rate, but it's pretty darn up there. This is paid for by Public Investing, 5.1% APY as of March 26, 2024, and is subject to change. A high-yield cash account is a secondary brokerage account with Public Investing, member FINRA/SIPC. Funds from this account are automatically deposited into partner banks where they earn a variable interest and are eligible for FDIC insurance. Neither Public Investing nor any of its affiliates is a bank. U.S. only. Learn more at public.com/disclosure/high-yield-account.
This is Marketplace. I'm Kai Rizdal. Think for me, if you would, about the biggest downtown area near you. Now, think about how it's recovering, or depending on where it is, maybe not recovering from the pandemic. People moving out, workers staying home. Well, you all know the drill. The reason I ask is that each downtown area looks to be bouncing back a little bit differently. Nashville has basically seen a full recovery. San Francisco's still got some challenges, just to pick two. Those are among the findings of a new report from Philadelphia's Center City District, analyzing the economic rebound in the 26 biggest downtown districts in this country. Of those 26, five were in Texas, whence Marketplace's Elizabeth Troval picks up the story.
When it comes to downtown recovery, the mix of employment is crucial.
There are cities, and San Antonio is one of them, which have a very, very high rate of jobs and industries in the hospitality, tourism, and entertainment.
Paul Levy is CEO of Philadelphia's Center City District, which wrote the report on downtown recovery.
Those cities have the highest rate of worker returns.
That's because you can't serve up frozen margaritas or entertain tourists on a Riverwalk boat tour from home. Dave Peterson with the Greater San Antonio Chamber of Commerce says it was locals who first returned to the city's walkable outdoor destinations.
We are seeing that more regular tourism now follow on the heels of the local return.
But further north in Dallas, downtown is more corporate, says Jennifer Scripps with Downtown Dallas, Inc.
We are the second largest concentration of financial services jobs in the country behind New York.
She says just 70% or so have returned to downtown offices. But tourists are back and spending more.
Everybody who's coming is shopping and having a spa treatment and dining.
She says Dallas is reinventing itself into a more walkable, attractive city to appeal to both residents and visitors. 240 miles south on I-45 in Houston, worker traffic is reminiscent of the oil bust days of the 1980s, which hollowed out downtown, says Central Houston, Inc. CEO Chris Larson.
it's a comparable type of strain on the office market, you know, which creates the need for so many other destination enhancing amenities.
He says while Astros games have been a huge draw, there's a need to make downtown a place people choose to go to for other reasons. In Houston, I'm Elizabeth Trovall for Marketplace.
Writer's strike is over. Talk shows and late night are coming back. Actors in the studios, though, are still talking. So we thought we'd get Stephanie Silverman back on the phone. She's the executive director of the Belcourt Theater. We've been talking to her for a couple of years now about running a nonprofit movie house in Nashville, Tennessee.
You know, the strikes were a little bit of an unexpected hurdle. We'll just say a lot of films that we were sort of expecting to show in September in this kind of fall space suddenly got moved into 2024, which is fine in the long run. I think it is mission critical that the writers and the actors and this entire community of creatives is supported in the way that they need. But in the short term, it's been a little bit of a juggling act. One of the major elements of opening a film, especially sort of in theaters, is that your actors go and talk to people about it. Whether that's, you know, newspaper interviews, certainly radio interviews, morning shows, like all of those appearances, the late night shows, they are part of the promotional machine that gives a movie the momentum that you want it to have before it opens to audiences. Having that missing from the puzzle has been a big shift. Our programming team had to pull together dozens and dozens and dozens of repertory titles to sort of fill those spaces that would normally be where sort of the new release world would sit. So, you know, we're having 30, 40 titles a month sometimes to make up a schedule that is still enticing and exciting for people. But we have gotten so used to it since 2020 that we're pretty flexible at this point. The pandemic has changed audiences, and we are not seeing older audiences come back in the way that they came to the theater before the pandemic. But we are seeing younger audiences come into the theater. And that is, of course, for a Taylor Swift concert, but it's also for midnight movies or other repertory screenings. I think there's a real enthusiasm and a feeling like we may even be turning a corner in a way and really rooting new audiences in the theatrical experience in ways that were unexpected. And it's a pretty optimistic moment, honestly.
It's a cool little theater. You ought to check it out if you're in Nashville. Stephanie Silverman, the Belcourt Theater in Nashville, Tennessee. As Mitchell was talking about up at the beginning of the program, the September jobs report comes out tomorrow. Nancy Marshall-Genzer's in for David tomorrow on our morning show. She will have the news as it breaks. But whichever way the data goes, a still strong labor market, if cooling slightly, is a safe bet. We just don't actually have only a single labor market in this country. That's really important. There are sectors and slices to be taken that can give us better insights about what is happening. And for us today, the sector in the slice is temporary help services, staffing agencies that supply temp workers to all kinds of different businesses. Less so, though, lately. The number of temp jobs in this economy has fallen every month this year. They're down almost 250,000 since their peak in March of last year. And a trend like that can signal a recession's on the way. But as Marketplace's Megan McCarty-Carina reports, and as you might have heard a time or two, the labor market's a little bit tricky to read these days.
When Alexandra Golden starts her day as a temp worker in Tampa, it can take a minute to get her bearings.
I have lost track of days, and like everything blends together now.
Is she heading to her job doing inventory of car parts or managing parking for the state fairgrounds in Florida? Or is she a receptionist at a traffic control company, a card dealer for a casino party, or maybe some combination?
There's a whole world of jobs out there that will take you on an as-needed basis. And luckily, I have five of them.
With the aid of a color-coded dry erase board calendar and a sense of adventure, Golden says since 2017, she's been able to cobble together a pretty good living working temporary jobs. She gets paid around $15 to $20 an hour, a few dollars more than before the pandemic. For some jobs, she's hired directly, but others are through a temp agency, which calls her on the behalf of other companies.
Hey, we have a job that starts tomorrow. It's for about a week and a half. Can you do it?
The temporary help services industry really got going with the rise of management consulting in the 1970s and 80s, says David Weil, a labor economist at Brandeis University and author of The Fissured Workplace.
The word of that day was focused on your core competency. Do what you're really good at and shed everything else.
That means jobs in payroll or janitorial services, software testing and development are now regularly outsourced to a web of subcontractors, often on a temporary or on-demand basis. And the ebb and flow of this workforce can be an early sign of a coming recession, says Ron Hetrick, a senior economist at labor market analytics firm Lightcast.
The first thing you do is you let go of your kind of flex staff because you don't, the cost of letting go your permanent staff are way higher.
But this time around?
Everything we've been experiencing has never happened before.
Like companies laying off all their workers and then needing to hire them back really quickly. That led to an explosion of temp jobs during the pandemic. Many of those positions were made permanent as companies scrambled to both retain and attract workers. Given this, Brandeis professor David Weil says, despite that thing about sticking to core competencies, we could be seeing a shift in the trend of outsourcing so many jobs to staffing agencies.
Workers are not going to be satisfied, and employers are realizing that they have to make bigger commitments to their workforce if they want to retain them.
But the temp industry is still bigger than it was right before the pandemic began. And it works for some people, like Alexandra Golden, who says she'll keep her five jobs. Despite the uncertainty and lack of benefits, she enjoys the variety and the flexibility of never getting pinned down.
Today is my first day and tomorrow is my last day, which is kind of nice. Like, I never truly feel burnt out working all of my jobs.
Even if it does require advanced color-coded calendar management skills. I'm Megan McCarty-Carino for Marketplace.
This final note on the way out today, which I'll preface by saying that we had chicken for dinner at my house the other night, and it was more expensive than I'd expected, actually. And I saw this on Reuters today, that chicken prices at grocery stores are at record highs and will probably stay there as Big Chicken cuts back on production to keep and increase their margins. Yes, avian flu is a factor, but still. All right, here is your moment of economic context as we depart. Oil today, the West Texas variety, light sweet crude, down another 2%, $82 a barrel. Now, yes, that is good for drivers and trucking companies and the very large chunk of this economy that runs on petroleum-derived products, everything from fertilizer to plastic. But falling oil, especially oil falling as fast as it has been, can be a sign of a slowing economy. Jobs tomorrow. We'll know more then. John Buckley, John Gordon, Rick Carr, Diantha Parker, Amanda Peacher, and Stephanie Seek are the Marketplace editing staff. I don't know why I said it that way. Amir Babawi is the managing editor. I'm Kai Rizdal. We will see you tomorrow, everybody. This is APM.
Hey everyone, it's Rima Khreis, host of This Is Uncomfortable. If you're looking for some good recommendations on books to read, Well, you should join This Is Uncomfortable's Summer Book Club. Every other week in our newsletter, we'll share a new book that'll make you rethink your relationship to money, class, and work, while also featuring an interview with the author or an expert on the topic. Plus, when you join, you'll be entered in a giveaway where you could win some This Is Uncomfortable merch. Be sure to check it out. Sign up today at marketplace.org/bookclub.